Bro, I'm trying to make Nate watch the final 5 minutes of WrestleMania from last night, and you're bothering me with this show. We only made it through when Rock interrupted. We haven't even got to Undertaker yet. Damn, dude.
You haven't got to Cena yet.
No, Cena went first and then The Rock. Remember, Cena came out, and then The Rock came out after Cena. Because that's who, Cena was there.
Yep.
And then, get your smell, and then Cena was like,
right.
But then, when The Rock was in there, you heard Undertaker.
Heard the bells.
Right.
The nerd in me that
nerd
appreciates this, and this goes back to, again, second mention for Brad Mertel on the show. He's a TV producer. The production level of the events that they put on in WWE is incredible.
Second to none.
Nah, I mean, second to this show.
Well, yeah, the production level of this show. Nah.
Then why didn't you watch it?
I would have. I mean, I was interested in it.
Well, Peacock. You got Peacock?
I've got Peacock. Yeah, I watch a lot of soccer on Peacock.
You just could tune in. And watch
I should have. I didn't. I wasn't thinking about it last night.
You don't care about the show.
Got back in town and was trying to get caught up with a lot of family stuff. But I
make the kids watch it.
I admire the
loved it.
The production level of everything they do.
George Kittle was at ringside.
There you go.
T-Pain was at ringside.
Jason Kelce was there the night before.
Jared Sutton, your thoughts on the WrestleMania main event?
I got too much going on with the women's game, the men's game.
Nope, not a good enough excuse. No way.
I'm sorry, I did not catch any WrestleMania, but I heard it was great. I heard it was great.
By the way, do we have a contender for tallest handsome guy on the show between him and Scott Carroll? All of a sudden, Scott came in. He's on your level, Jared. I don't know if you're feeling any pressure there.
See, I think Jake's in this conversation. Well, I think Jake's at the top of the list.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, I like it.
Different approach to style compared to you. And I feel like Scotty Carroll's a little more, you know,
buttoned up.
Yeah, a little more buttoned up.
I appreciate it, Nate.
Let's start with, Jake would like me to let everyone know there's a quick entertainment story that some people might enjoy. Country star Morgan Wallen.
Uh-oh.
Has just been released from a Nashville jail, charged with 3 counts of felony reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon.
Oh, no.
According to the affidavit, Morgan Wallen threw a chair off the 6-story rooftop of Chiefs on Broadway Sunday night, laughing afterwards. I don't
know. It was a CMAs were last night, right?
He's trending on Twitter.
Guess he let the liquor talk, huh?
I don't know.
I was just on Broadway on Friday night and Saturday
reading
morning.
The story, he threw the chair off the sixth.
That's dangerous.
Did you throw a chair off the
I didn't
sixth
throw anything
floor?
Off okay. anything. You know what I did do on Friday night, though? I was at a bar on Broadway.
I bet you were.
With my
with Morgan Wallen.
Amazing production assistant, Donna.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, we were watching live music and everything, but they had the Iowa-UConn game on the TV right by my table. And so I was locked into that, and all of a sudden I looked over my shoulder, and there were about 20 people gathered around watching the game, fired up about it. We were just some of 14.3 million people that were watching that game Friday night.
As Jake would say, cool story, bro.
Bro.
Are you a
Morgan? That's after Morgan Wallen defended Taylor Swift over the weekend.
Well, and then threw a chair off the roof. Are you a Morgan Wallen?
Taylor Swift's like, yeah, why don't you not defend
Are you a Morgan Wallen guy, Jared Sutton?
You know, my wife is a big fan of Morgan Wallen, so
better talk to her.
This morning. That was her first topic this morning before she left for work.
How did she weigh in on this? What did she say?
She was very disappointed.
Right.
She was very disappointed. So I didn't get the full details, though, so I appreciate that.
Here's something.
I did not.
Something
get
funny.
The chair throwing.
When she comes home from work, surprise her, throw a chair off your roof and see what she says. Say, see, I could be like Morgan Wallen
see
too.
See her reaction.
Right. It might be good.
Yeah.
Tell me your reaction, and I'll politely ask the music to change to any of our any song from our wonderful Arkansas soundtrack. John Calipari stealing the spotlight from the men's national championship game on game day, and agreeing to a 5-year deal to become the next head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, I mean, very much kind of a bombshell last night. Had heard some rumors of it, swirling the other day, and then was told by Power 5 assistant about 4 or 5 o'clock yesterday that it was done.
Mm.
And couldn't believe it. I was just kind of in shock. But I guess not all that surprising. I just, you know, with everything that took place to Kentucky, the Kentucky season and how it ended and the history that Calipari has had in the tournament of late, you know, him staying around in Lexington and then for this to kind of transpire weeks later, you know, the Tyson family, you know, heavy donor family in Fayetteville and ponied up money. And I just think that's not just the salary, but the NIL commitment and what we're seeing now and what modern day college athletics is now, you know, to have that type of commitment financially and those resources, tough for John Calipari to turn that down and get the new contract. And I just feel like, you know, he knew he was kind of a dead man walking in Lexington, and he finds a job in the SEC. So I'm really curious now what Kentucky does just with the timing of this. Final Four, you know, just wrapped up over the weekend, and, you know, it was a talking point yesterday that there was some smoke that, you know, Calipari might be looking to move on, and here we are. So now it becomes what happens with Kentucky, and you know this is going to be kind of a domino and a chip that is going to make some headway in terms of movement with some other schools. And I'm just really curious, you know, where it goes from here.
Okay, so I will ask you to pretend to be the Kentucky AD. Hell, I should ask you to pretend to be the Missouri AD, but that doesn't exist right now. Would you like to be the Missouri AD? I'm sorry. Damn it. Who's your first phone call? Kentucky AD, go.
Yeah, Jay Wright's got to tell me no. That's the first
one. All right, he just told you no. Now who?
Okay, so that's done. You know, I think the names, Nate Oates is up there.
Yep.
I think the buyout is serious in terms of, I think it's $18 million in a buyout. So that's pretty difficult to look at. I am curious about the Billy Donovan name. Just because, you know, I just the thought of him coming back to college has kind of been out there a little bit. I don't think he would take it necessarily, but I also think it might be something you look into. I think Scott Drew's on this list for sure. And then you kind of work your way down. I saw T.J. Otzelberger's name out there. I think that's kind of interesting too. You know, a younger, proven coach in terms of his track record in rebuilding a program. Now, you know, Lexington a little different than Ames, just a different job going from Iowa State to Kentucky. The pressures, it's just a different job. And would TJ want that? That's a question. So there's going to be a lot of names out there that are going to be talked about. And I am just kind of curious, you know, what names are real? What names could really kind of take that on? I think Coach Hurley at UConn, yeah, call him, make him tell you no, too. He'd be on this list as well.
And so so we'll play into Jake's suggestion of Dan Hurley. A Twitter account called The Hoop Herald said, make the call to Dan Hurley. He signed in June a 6-year, $32 million deal. And, I mean, Kentucky could double that.
Yep.
I mean, that would be hard to say no if a Kentucky said, $10 million a year, come on, or whatever. And I don't know, like, if that would be a fit, but, I mean, you got to call these people. What, you're Kentucky? Why not?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and Steve, I think the big thing, I go back to what I was saying about Calipari taking the Arkansas job. And I find it very interesting that the conversation is around his salary and what he's going to get paid yearly and what the NIL commitment is.
A lot.
And Arkansas's got a ton of money, as we know, and NIL is a major driver. And I don't know. I think that's kind of something to watch for, especially at a job like Kentucky, where, you know, they're going to look to, you know, they just lost their legendary coach. And I know they probably are okay with that a little bit. I think it was probably time, both parties. I think it's good for Kentucky in some ways. But they're going to have to really look at where do they go from here and, where, you know, are there resources there, you know, to draw a serious name and, you know, take the job and where it's at and what Cal did in his tenure. Cal's track record. You know, won a national championship, put so many guys in the NBA, the 30-win seasons, SEC championships. I mean, he had a great run. It wasn't great necessarily in the postseason of late, but they got to now find a guy. And that fan base, you know, it's just, like I said, it's different. And just going to Lexington and being at Kentucky games, sitting in that crowd, you know, it's just, it's a unique place. And where they go from here, I think it's going to come back to that NIL conversation as well, not just what they can pay a head coach.
I'm just curious what your thoughts are on the market for coaches and how you define a good job today compared to in the past. Because you're talking about NIL money. I'm sure that comes into play, like, you know, how much money can I get to bring players in? But I think in the past, like let's just use, like, Otzelberger and Drew as examples. For almost all of basketball history, you would say it's a no-brainer the Kentucky job is a better place to be than Baylor or Iowa State. Is that the case anymore? I mean, do you think coaches will look at it differently now? And does a blue blood program, is it as attractive as maybe it used to be when other schools can now pay maybe you as much money but also help you? If you have just as good of a chance to win at Baylor and you're Scott Drew, you don't have to deal with everything that Kentucky has, you know, in addition to it. Is Kentucky really a better job than Baylor in the current landscape?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's something that, you know, when, to your point, like, we are in a different just kind of timeline in terms of how, you know, how different it is to operate now as a head coach in college basketball. And, you know, with it kind of being more of an even playing field, and I don't think it's necessarily, you know, even when we're talking about Arkansas and we're talking about Kentucky and some of these other schools that have, you know, pretty serious NIL funds. And other schools are meeting that, like other schools around the country. It's not just the SEC. Other schools around the country are competitive in that space. But I still think when you're a coach and you're in a place where, you know, you can be yourself, you're, you know, you have a commitment from your athletic department, you have a commitment that they're going to try to support you as best they can with resources, and you have a good donor base and a good fan base, I don't think it's necessarily you have to take a job, you know. I don't think it's like you rush, you know, to take the biggest job. And I think maybe 10 years ago might have been a little different in terms of the Kentucky job is open and every name wants to go after that. I think it's different now. But it's still Kentucky. It is still a blue blood. It is still, you know, a job that has a serious fan base and resources where, you know, you can win. But the pressures are going to be there, and it's going to be a little bit different, and you're going to be, you know, required to win right away. I think that's another aspect of it is you're in a place where, you know, you can maybe go through a year where you have a tough year, and there's not a hot seat on you every single season. That's something you really need to consider, you know, when you're looking at this job. But coaches, you know, they want that challenge. Some of them are high-level competitors, and they want to go to the, you know, the best job, and, you know, a job that where they can compete and, you know, have a chance to try to be the best coach in the country. You know, some of the coaches want that challenge too. But at the end of the day, I think when you hire a head coach, it is still about your staff. Like, I always say that, like, hiring a head coach is very important, yes. And, you know, sometimes names can be recycled names. And at the end of the day, your support staff, you know, who you're bringing in as assistants, who you're bringing in on the developmental side, how are you going to handle NIL? Are we in a place where Kentucky should bring in a GM to run an NIL fund and take that off of the head coach's plate instead of it being just John Calipari, which was what it was at Kentucky, where he's making all decisions based around NIL with the players and how he's building out the roster? So that's something I am curious, you know, what happens from here if that changes for Kentucky and how they're going to manage this.
All right, let's change topics to the women's national championship game yesterday between UConn and South Carolina. South Carolina finishes undefeated. But man, Iowa started off 10-0, and Caitlin Clark had 18 points in the first quarter. That's a record for a national championship game for points in a quarter. But then South Carolina slowly took over and grinded away. And I said earlier in the show, it wasn't rocket science. They were bigger and stronger. and they just had too much size, and Cardoso was unstoppable as far as rebounding. And what did she have? 17 rebounds and 7 offensive rebounds. And South Carolina out-rebounded Iowa 51-29, 18 offensive rebounds. And that was just too much, and they wore Iowa down, and they had so much depth in the front court. That's why they're undefeated. And then they had, you know, a freshman like Johnson step up and hit 19 points when she was averaging 6 points a game. It was a valiant effort by Iowa, but clearly the better team won in South Carolina. So before I ask you about Caitlin Clark, just specifically, I mean, that was the story of the game, right? The tremendous size of South Carolina, too much for Iowa to overcome.
No question. It's 2 championships in 3 years for Dawn Staley. She's gone 109-3. You know, that's
pretty all right then.
I mean, that's just incredible, an incredible run. And I'm glad we start with South Carolina because they are the champs and they were the best team. Their depth speaks for itself. Tessa Johnson was great yesterday. She had 19 points, was huge off the bench. And then I do want to give a shout-out to Raven Johnson, who guarded Caitlin Clark yesterday. And I think the game, you know, what I love about the women's game, I'm a big fan of the quarters. I like that because of the media timeouts, yes, it kind of breaks up the game differently. What Raven Johnson did to close the half and close some of these quarters, like huge steal before the half to kind of change momentum and flip momentum at the half. Third quarter, huge steal at the end of the third quarter, and South Carolina went on this little run and made threes because of her defense. And Caitlin Clark had to pitch a perfect game for Iowa to have any chance. If you remember, Iowa beat South Carolina last year, and Caitlin had 40. And for Iowa to beat South Carolina in the national championship, Caitlin had to go for 40. Like, that was the number, and she ends up with 30. And it's still an incredible game for Caitlin. But, like, Caitlin had to be that good, and Raven was great defensively, I thought. So it is about the size and the length and the athleticism and the rebounding and the points in the paint. But Iowa got hammered on the glass last year, and it was just about Caitlin Clark's offense and her being able to score and take over a game. And I just thought South Carolina defensively did just enough to stop Caitlin Clark. I think that's a big reason why the national champions today.
And this is a different South Carolina team than last year, and they depended on a lot of freshmen. And you're right, the defensive job that Johnson did, and just with the hand and the face, just to disrupt her vision, just everything, being aggressive and playing good defense, forcing turnovers, wearing her down. So then I'll get into the second part of the conversation that we had in the first hour of the show. Look, man, I get it. There have been great women's players that we've seen over the course of the history of women's basketball. But I got so sick and tired of hearing, you know, all these former UConn players and other players just find different ways to criticize Caitlin Clark and to pick her apart. And then, she's not going to do this to the WNBA next year. She better, and all, just whatever angle they wanted to take. And I'm like, look, okay, is she the greatest player of all time? Okay, maybe not, all right? Is she the greatest scorer? Maybe, who knows? That's what's fun about sports. We get to debate that. But no one can deny, nobody can deny that she has done, what she's done for women's basketball is unlike anyone else as far as lifting this sport to more viewers, more people caring, more people watching, more people being excited to watch. She elevated the sport. And if you are like Nate and I, that were color commentators for Division I women's basketball, or if you're like me that spent years and years coaching my daughters, now watching my daughter play high school basketball, if you're like you, Jarrett, you also have been a television analyst for Missouri women's basketball. If you're a former player, current player, coach, whatever, if you're involved in women's basketball at any level, you should be thrilled with what Caitlin Clark did. You should be happy because she made your sport better. She elevated your sport. She helped you. If you're a coach of anything, any level, she made the sport more popular. And I just don't, I roll my eyes at the hate because all she did was bring more people to a sport, brought more attention to it and more popularity. And I was really glad that Dawn Staley grabbed the mic and took the opportunity to give credit to Caitlin Clark and to thank her for what she did, because she gets it, and called her one of the GOATs. Because what she did, all she did was elevate a sport that a lot of people care about.
Yeah. Preach, too, Stephen. I mean, I think all facts right there. I appreciate what you said, because it's all true. And you took the words out of my mouth in terms of, I was really appreciative of Dawn Staley in that moment. I was hoping she would do that. You know, she's a head coach. She needed to do that. And I don't think it takes away anything from what South Carolina accomplished in terms of the season they had. I mean, a perfect season. They put 38-0. They should be the talk. I mean, they're the champions, and they were the best team in college basketball. But I think when you look at, and Dawn said it, like, the weight of the world was on Caitlin Clark. She drew so much attention all season. And this year, her numbers went up from a year ago. And, you know, if you look at this Iowa team, they were a really good team, you know, but they're not in the national championship back-to-back seasons if it's not for Caitlin Clark and the job she did. And it is very much like Steph in terms of just the impact, in terms of changing the game. But I was so disappointed all weekend, honestly. Like, this is such an incredible moment for women's basketball, for women's athletics, for women's athletes, for girls all over the country, all over the world, that look up and aspire and want role models in one of, you know, try to seek out, you know, playing basketball now because of Caitlin Clark, and because not just Caitlin, but just a lot of the women that were on full display in the women's tournament. And I just find it a little disappointing that we can't celebrate greatness, right? Like, South Carolina is great. I felt like it had to be, you're on one side of the aisle, you know, and I guess that's a part of the storyline, and what made the women's tournament so compelling was just a lot of the matchups. Even if you're going back to UConn and LSU and USC, like, there just were so many storylines, great players, coaches, and that's what made the excitement and the intrigue of the women's tournament. But I just was so disappointed in some of the comments that were made, trying to tear down Caitlin Clark, and or if you're, you know, if you're, you know, such a big Caitlin Clark fan, it's let's try to tear down everybody else. And it just drove me crazy, because I just kept thinking, like, this is such a great basketball game. Me and my wife were watching yesterday, and, you know, Caitlin Clark's great, and Camila Cardoso's great, and both teams are great, and both coaches are great. I just thought it was a celebration of, like, man, how long has it been since we've been wanting to see the women's game on this platform, and here it is. And it has everything to do with Caitlin Clark. Like, she is the reason why that is, because of her talent, because of her skill. And what I love about the women's game, and I love this when I call games, calling the Mizzou games in the Sophie Cunningham era, is the women's game, it has to be a lot about fundamentals. It has a lot about skill. They can't just depend on natural athleticism and size. Like, they have to play the game with a lot of skill, a lot of fundamentals. And technique is at the women's game is really high level, and that's what I love about the women's game. And I think yesterday was just so much about Caitlin, yes, and she ends her career on just such an incredible run, like D1 women's career scoring leader, most three-pointers in women's history, Big Ten career point leader, assist leader, most points in NCAA tournament history, Wooden Award winner, player of the year, first-team All-American. Like, her accolades are through the roof, and she'll be remembered forever in terms of her impact and her legacy at Iowa. And I'm really excited to see what she does in the NBA. I don't buy into, well, she's going to the WNBA, it's going to be a lot. Yeah, it's going to be harder. She's going to be a rookie. It's in any sport, she'll be a rookie. But she's so good, and she's going to draw, and it's going to be so good for the WNBA game. And that's what should be celebrated. It's just where the sport is, where it's going, and Caitlin Clark, take a bow, because you're a major reason and a big reason why we're here.
I'll push back a little bit on some of this stuff. I think you can make an argument that all this conversation is another step in women's basketball's popularity. What do we do with LeBron James all the time? Right? Like, people can't wait to debate his greatness. Does he really stack up to Michael Jordan or not? It fuels this conversation, and people from Jordan's generation get offended if you try to say that LeBron was better than him. And they use titles, right, a lot of times as the argument there. When people get invested in a sport, they have arguments. They have debates. And it seems like you gotta. It's annoying, but it's part of it too. Like it's the great sports bar, you know, conversation, or even sports talk conversation. What would this player have done in that generation? What would that player have done in this generation? And I understand. Like I'm with you guys. Caitlin Clark doesn't deserve to be torn down by anybody. Everybody ought to build her up and talk about how great she is and these other great players. But you also see like Diana Taurasi is a freaking MF-er as a competitor herself, right? Mm-hmm. And so she's going to say, no, I'm not going to just kiss her ring. She's going to have to come here and earn it at the pro level. And, you know, I think it's actually maybe in a weird way good for – I think it contributed a lot to the intrigue of this tournament. You're on one side or the other. You're either rooting for LSU or you're rooting for Caitlin Clark, right? You either thought that charge or that moving screen was a good call or you thought it was terrible. And everybody's got a take on it, an opinion, and that fuels the conversation. That makes people even more interested in what's going on. So it's kind of like taking the good with the bad a little bit. I think the more popularity that she's brought, the more scrutiny also comes and the more people want to debate about it. So does that make sense? Like, I think in a weird way, maybe it helps fuel the popularity of the game.
I don't think he did for the NBA what she did for women's college basketball, though.
No. Well, the NBA was already established in this, but you could say that Bird and Magic did. And how many people, either you loved Larry Bird and hated Magic Johnson, or you loved Magic Johnson and you know, the other way around, you know? Those two guys in the NBA was really struggling at that time. And the rivalry and the people getting in their camps as to which side they were rooting for elevated the league, right? Made it more popular.
Yeah. I think, Nate, your point is so valid. I appreciate what you're saying because it's the truth. And there's no question about that. I think for me, you know, just kind of piggybacking off of where the moment is, though. Like, I think this is the peak moment where the women's game, the ratings speak for themselves. I mean, everything that was made of, like, a call in the semifinal on a legal screen situation, that was the right call. You know, there was so much controversy around that. And it's good. You're right. Like, that means the sport's arrived. There's no question about that. But I think everything, just the comments that are out there, I get social media can be just kind of a cesspool of just, you know, things that, you know, not necessarily reflect how people view Caitlin and how people view the women's sport. But it just felt like, I remember when Steph was at Davidson, specifically LeBron James going to watch him play and making it a point to go see, you know, Steph and just how he was impacting the college tournament at that time. And it was a different situation. But it feels like, for me, like Caitlin's going to the WNBA, and now it shifts to, like, all this talk around, well, now she'll go to the WNBA, and, you know, is she going to change the game at that level, at the pro level now? And sort of like, almost kind of like bashing her, and I kind of like it because it gives her, it's going to give Caitlin something to be motivated about because she's going to the WNBA. And I do think she's going to be an elite player at the WNBA level. Like, she's not just a scorer. She's a point guard. She's a playmaker. And let's be clear, this Iowa team, solid team, really good college team. Caitlin's going to the WNBA where there's going to be so much more talent around her, mm-hmm. and she's going to be a different player. So mm-hmm. I think for me, with some of these former players, it's the WNBA needs to go to a different place now. You know, I kind of want to see the WNBA take off and go to a place where it wants to go. Because the college women's game is in a great place, and it's not going anywhere, in my opinion. I think there's too many good players and players that are coming in. We got freshman and Juju Watkins who just had an historic season. And the college game is in a good place. Caitlin's now got so much pressure, and I think she's capable of it. Because in some of her post game, and I hate to get long-winded, but, like, she can take the moment and excel in that moment. And she's carried herself so well throughout this entire process. She's a star, and she's going to be a star at the WNBA level. And I think that's just kind of the next phase of this, of where the women's sport is going, if that makes sense.
Can you do another segment with us?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, so we won't make it as long, because we got to talk about the men's tournament tonight, the men's championship game tonight. So we'll take a break. We've got Jarrett Sutton. We'll be right back after this on WHB. The Twitter account Big Blue Express is in lockstep with Jake Gutierrez. They tweet, if I was Mitch Barnhart, my coaching search is this. One, offer Dan Hurley a truckload of money and make him say no. Two, reach out to Billy Donovan and Jay Wright and offer them the job in whatever order you prefer. Three, final tier is Nate Oates and Scott Drew. Can't go past them. So there it is. Big Blue Express doing the Kentucky AD's job for him. Jarrett Sutton, will we witness greatness tonight from UConn in winning back-to-back championships, or will Purdue put a stop to this and as 6.5-point underdogs shock the basketball world?
Well, first, I think it's a great matchup because I do think these are the two best teams in the country. So we're getting a great national championship game. You know, I think the matchup between Donovan Clingan and Zach Edey is one that I was really hoping for. You know, I think in terms of where the line is and UConn being the favorite, I think that should be the case. You know, Zach Edey has been great for Purdue all year. And, you know, there's great role players around him. Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, Lance Jones. You know, that's what I think going to come down to who wins this tonight is the players around the two bigs. Because so much is going to be made of the centers, deservedly so. They're going to be important pieces. But it is going to come back to guard play, I think, in who wins this game. Braden Smith did not play well in the semifinal against NC State, and he is the most important player for Purdue if they're going to win this game, in my opinion. Like, I think we know what we're going to get from Zach, but Braden going 1-for-9, 5 turnovers, you know, he did rebound the ball well against NC State, but his passing, and, you know, he did have, I think it was 6 assists, he has to take care of the ball. And he has to make shots because Fletcher Lawyer is their other shooter and Lance Jones is their other shooter. They hit 7 threes combined against NC State. But Fletcher Lawyer and Lance Jones, they are mostly spot-up shooters. Braden is their attacker, playmaker, and Zach and Braden will probably play all 40 minutes tonight. And how Braden plays in this game is how Purdue has a chance to win. On the UConn side, what we saw in the semifinal that I thought really jumped out, and Alabama gave UConn a great game first off, but Stephon Castle, we talked about him last week when you asked me, you know, of NBA players that are going to be in this Final Four, who should we circle? And one of the three I mentioned was Stephon Castle, and Stephon Castle played like a full-blown pro in that semifinal. Like, he made threes, which is not his forte. He's not a real shooter, but he hit a couple threes. But his physicality, his toughness, his ability to play in the paint and make plays, his ability to get to the free throw line, he guards everywhere. He can switch. He just brings so much pressure, and he can lock down any guard. So Stephon Castle, to me, is a huge X factor for UConn defensively and offensively. And then Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, Alex Caravan, you know, those guys have been pretty solid for UConn all year. And I think Tristan Newton, we've seen him so many times just take over games. He had 9 assists in that Alabama game, but he can go for 30. He can go off and score the ball and make shots. We saw it in the Kansas game when they were in Lawrence. We've seen it many of times where Stephon Castle can just go off, catch fire, and take over a game as well. So guard play is going to be so important in this national championship game. And I'm really curious to see, like, how Purdue matches up and guards Stephon Castle and Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer. And can they create some pressure? Can they create turnovers? Because Alabama did a great job of spacing and spreading UConn, making shots, attacking Donovan Clingan, Grant Nelson, who's more of an athletic face-up big. Purdue's different because it's Zach Edey back to the basket. And I'm just curious how that plays out both sides.
So obviously one of the big things people want to talk about is Zach Edey back to the basket against an actual 7-footer like Klingon. How do you see that when it does in that situation? You know, how does that play out in your opinion?
Yeah, so you know, the thing that you know, Zach is so strong and physical, and his base is so good. Like his lower body strength, his endurance, his conditioning, he's got great touch. And he was just able to basically score over DJ Burns a lot, just based off the size discrepancy in terms of the height and the difference there with DJ Burns. It's a little different with Donovan Klingon because of the size, and Donovan moves a little better in terms of just his reactivity. Like his ability to react to certain actions is a little quicker than Zach Edey, both offensively and defensively. The biggest thing for Zach is I think Zach has that, when I talk about that base, like Zach's a little stronger to hold his ground and be able to, you know, bury guys and be able to get an edge and be able to get to his right, left-hand hooks. Sometimes with Donovan Klingon, in just specifically back-to-the-basket post moves, Donovan can struggle to really keep his ground and bury a guy. Or he'll turn, and the touch there is not the same as Zach. Now, the difference being Donovan Klingon as a lob threat out of pick and roll from the dunker, he's just a little bit more reactive, a little quicker to the ball. And in terms of shot blocking, Donovan can come from the top down and block a shot a little bit better than Zach Edey defensively. The drop coverage, Nate, like ball screen coverage, is just critical in the game today. And those two guys are mostly drop bigs. But the one thing UConn can do with Donovan is they can show in a hard hedge. They can blitz a little bit. They don't do it a lot. But Donovan just moves a little bit better than Zach in that regard. And I think that could be something to watch for in this game. But in terms of, like, that matchup alone, one-on-one, you know, back to the basket, just post up in isolation, you know, Zach could get a little bit of Donovan. But Donovan is not going to back down. He's going to contest. Donovan's gone up against good bigs, too, throughout the season. And Donovan just looks so much more healthy. He's had foot issues in the past, and he looks healthy. And he's just been such a dominant force, both these guys have, throughout the tournament. And it's going to be such a fun matchup to watch tonight.
Okay, who wins tonight? And more importantly, if it's UConn, do they win by more than 6.5?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can, you know, go against it. I mean, UConn beat Alabama by 14, and I don't think the score really does the game justice of what that game was. UConn was up 4 at half, and Alabama made some runs. I mean, it felt like it was a 7-0 run from Alabama, a 7-0 run from UConn, another 7-0 run from Alabama. And really, UConn is just relentless. Like, they do – they you talk about Hurley and just kind of his – you know, how he acts on the sideline and on the bench. Like, his team reflects him. There's no question about it. Their toughness, their ability to execute, their offensive scheme is high level. Like, I love watching UConn run offense. They have so many counters. And one of the things that Coach Hurley did, and I'm just fascinated to watch it tonight, but one thing he did that I think is such a huge, huge little thing that a coach can do that makes such a big difference. When we talk about great coaching, it's all about little things. It's all about little details that they can do in a game to counter, to adjust. And one of the things he did was put Stephon Castle in a ball screen as if he was a 5. And then he put him in the dunker spot many a times as if he was a 5 because of how Alabama was guarding the guards and how Alabama was trying to guard Donovan Klingon. They just used Stephon Castle in different ways and allowed him to use his athleticism. It was one of the great things that they did from a tactical standpoint of why they're able to win that game, score 86, and beat Alabama. What does that look like against Purdue? How does that change? So I'm going to say yes, I think UConn wins, and I think it's more than 6, just because I can't go against UConn. They've done it every game. They've done it throughout this tournament. They are a possessed team to repeat. They don't care about winning. They want to beat you and beat you handedly. It's not about winning a game. They want to make a statement every single game, and they've done that. And they've just gotten consistent production from all their guys. And that, to me, is what's so, so interesting about this specific Utah. They lost guys last year now. They lost a lot of good players from that national championship team, reloaded. Cam Spencer is a totally different player at UConn than what he was at Rutgers. Like, just a completely different player. And that speaks to the coaches and the staff of UConn and what they've been able to accomplish.
Jarrett Sutton, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
That's Jarrett Sutton. We'll be right back after this on WHB. I can tell you what, I am interested in the game tonight because if UConn wins, I win. In the bracket pool that I got in on DraftKings and then the 8-10 bracket contest, all those, I have UConn beating Purdue in the championship game. So, might do some hedging, though. So, because I'll be honest with you, like, I think UConn's going to win, but I'm not sure of it because I think Purdue's really, really good. And Purdue, I do believe UConn and Purdue are the two best teams in the nation. And I don't, it wouldn't be some type of stunner to me if Purdue won, because I think they're wildly talented.
You should also, I think UConn's for sure going to win. That's why you should be concerned that they're not.
Right.
Because there's no chance they lose. So you should be concerned.
And theoretically, I would like to be, I want to hedge because I would like to be free to root for Purdue tonight.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, my best friend Caesar, his wife is a Purdue grad, and they are at the Final Four watching. And Caesar, has been spotted in pictures on Facebook wearing a Purdue t-shirt at the game. So that's love.
That is love.
That is true love. I mean, would you do that for your wife? If she went to another school?
Depends on the school.
That's not what I asked you.
If it was Purdue, yeah, I'd wear a Purdue. I don't have any.
Any school for your wife? For Kelly, any school.
Missouri.
What is it Meatloaf said? I would do anything for love, but I won't do that.
Because I could tell you, Caesar, I bet you wasn't easy for him.
Nah, probably not.
But he's got it on. He's taking pictures everywhere. He's in it. Hey, no, job number one, you got to keep a happy home.
Mom ain't happy, nobody's happy.
I bet she wore some KU gear.
She did. She does.
Yeah. So
she does that for him.
Yeah.
It's not a big rivalry between KU and Purdue, though. No. So it's that's an easier pill to swallow.
Big dog ripped the hearts out of young KU fans.
I was there. I was in the building that day.
I was at home watching my dad curse at the television screen.
I was getting cursed at by an elderly Purdue fan, actually.
I believe it.
We'll be right back after this on WHP.